Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whom I have been enormously impressed with for his acumen and his understanding, really, of the character of that free world and the threats to it is our first guest. He is Benjamin Weingarten, and at a remarkably tender age, he has, seems to me, gotten pretty squared away and helping the rest of us do the same through such outlets as the London Center for Policy Research, where he is a senior fellow, also outlets like The Federalist and National Review and Newsmax. He is also the founder and CEO of ChangeUp Media, LLC, a media consulting firm, and perhaps to his particular credit, a Publius Fellow of the Claremont Institute. I'm insanely jealous for that distinction. Benjamin Weingarten, welcome back. It's so good to have you, I think, for the first time in our new year, so a happy one to you.
Yes, Frank, happy new year to you as well, and thank you, as always, for that very kind introduction.
Well, I'm thinking it's more than deserved, and want you to demonstrate it by your thoughtful comments. Let's talk a little bit about the State of the Union. Ben, I was so struck, as I think an awful lot of Americans were, I'm told even 70 or so percent of CNN viewers, if you can believe it, by the performance of the president, the extent to which he made a profound, well, I call it love letter to America as his principal message, and the contrast between that and the seeming indifference, if not outright hostility, of Democrats to those themes of loving our country and its principles and symbols and accomplishments. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there are, as you put it properly, a contrast that is incredibly striking. And to me, there are two images that will always resonate from this State of the Union. On the one hand, you have a North Korean defector who fought his way to freedom, standing valiantly, holding up his crutches, celebrating freedom, and the entire gallery in raucous applause. And on the other hand, the other image is that of Democrats sitting on their hands, holding their applause, and in some cases howling and booing the core tenets of what make America, America. There were remarkable images of when the president was discussing lower unemployment rates or the costs borne by American citizens of illegal immigration or the dramatic acceleration of economic growth in the face of the president's deregulatory agenda. All of those things down to basic core items like celebrating faith, family, the individual over the state, in God we trust, the Democrats sat on their hands. And I think that is a very perfect illustration of where the left is today. And incidentally, I think an interesting proxy for what we might see in a midterm elections, which many conservatives have been highly concerned about, and rightfully so, I think, based upon the seats that are up and the way the map is drawn. But if you look at the Democrats sitting for almost everything the president said during that speech in disgust, and then you see a poll which shows overwhelming majorities, and in particular, including independents, who were in favor of what the president was arguing, I think there's a real interesting contrast there, and maybe these midterm elections won't be as dire as they tend to be during the first midterm in a president's first term.
Yeah, you know, Ben, I think that's so right. Your thinking on the State of the Union tracks perfectly with mine, which proves your acumen as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I was talking with colleagues yesterday, and I think there's a general view that there's an opportunity for a real tipping point here, with the chance not only to expose what is the hostility, as you say, of the Democrats to these core principles that so many of us embrace. As the president put it, you know, we're all dreamers. In the end, American dream. And this is really something that they were flouting so dramatically. I think it gave real offense. Now, of course, it will depend on, you know, the messaging and what happens in between times. But I do think that especially if what is actually the background and the political associations as well as tendencies of those who are taking these stridently, anti-American views, it may well prove to be a very different kind of election than we were expecting. But let me turn to one other thing that you've written about recently, Ben Weingarten, at the Federalist, I believe. You talked about the president's national security strategy, which overall I thought was a pretty impressive document. The concern I've had has been partly the implementation of it, much as we saw a failure to implement some of his key, you know, policy prescriptions enunciated during the campaign during his first year. Talk about the myths that you think the strategy exposes and the likelihood that we'll actually see the strategy faithfully implemented now.
Well, first, I agree with you. The national security strategy, which defines itself as defining a president's strategy of principled realism, is a very eloquent, robust, comprehensive elucidation of the kind of America first, U.S. national interest focused principles that have to undergird a policy if we're to reverse the sort of liberal, progressive, Wilsonian internationalism that has marked our foreign policy establishment and thus our foreign policy for decades, I would argue, to our great detriment. What I pointed out in this piece were three particular core myths that the NSS, the National Security Strategy, points to. The first one being that economic liberalization leads to political liberalization. The second, that in effect, Israel is the core issue that stands at the heart of all the Middle East's problems. And the third principle that the NSS points out, and one that we've spoken about in the past, is the National Security Strategy arguing that we are not at war with violent extremists who are nihilistic, but rather with the jihadist enemy focused on implementing Sharia law worldwide. Three key principles, any of which I'm happy to go through, but which point at the premises that are flawed within that Wilsonian progressive internationalist foreign policy establishment. And if we can reverse these flawed premises, we can stop with the failed policies and ultimately make a stronger, more secure, more prosperous America.
Yeah, boy, I couldn't agree more. And I think they're really illustrative of the kind of break from the Obama administration's policies, most especially, that the president promised. But I am concerned. I don't think we saw as much progress during the first year as we should have, a notable exception perhaps being the decision to recognize reality and move the embassy to Israel's capital. But on the others, particularly that last bit about the violent extremists, I note the president did not use the term radical Islamic terrorism in the State of the Union address, let alone talk about Sharia as the national security strategy does. So we'll be watching closely for its implementation. Hey, Ben, before we run out of time, very quickly, this may be overtaken by events. There's talk that sometime in the course of the day today, the president may actually cut loose the so-called memorandum of the House Intelligence Committee, make it publicly available rather than, as some are counseling him, interpose objections to it. But by the time this goes to air, we may know the answer. But what are your thoughts on the advisability of releasing the memo?
Well, Sunlit is the best disinfectant, and I think it's very telling that you have this apparently massive campaign to try to stop the divulging of critical information that alleges the most serious types of abuses that threaten the civil rights of all Americans, by the way, not just the people who are the persons of interest with respect to the Russia investigation and all the associated other investigations. I would just say that, of course, the rank and file members of all of these institutions are great Americans. They are patriots. That doesn't mean that there are not abuses, and especially in the places in government where there's the most power. And unfortunately, the power to destroy political opponents is one that it appears the Obama administration may have taken repeatedly. And given my grave concerns and the grave concerns that everyone should have across the aisle, we should all be advocating for the disclosure of as much material as we can possibly get, from the memo down to the underlying information on which it's based, to the degree which it can be released. And the major problem that we're seeing here is that the national security and intelligence agencies involved with this are the ones who are telling us what we can and cannot see, but they're the ones being investigated. And that's why we need Congress to do its oversight powers, and we need the president to assert himself.
Amen. We have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Ben Weingarten of the London Center for Policy Research, thank you so much for your time today and for the extraordinary work you're doing. We'll get back to you soon because I want to talk to you about whether we'll get to the bottom of the Iran scandals as well. But that's for another day. In the meantime, stay well, my friend. Keep up the good work and come back to us soon. Next up, we'll speak about this memo business and more with our colleague Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.